turned to Vir-9 and realized she had not moved either. "Can you stand?" I asked Vir-9. "No," she gasped in pain, and her pale skin whitened with the words so that her skin tone almost matched Fahalda's. "Where is the ovule?" "I dropped it up in the courtyard." She raised her head slightly. "Lie back down." I moved over to her, and she complied with my order. The armor on her chest was in tatters. I knew elvens could heal much faster than humans, but they weren't as immune to wounds as O'Barney. I carefully unbuckled the latches on the front of her armor and pulled it off. Blood spurted from the wound. I could make out the white bones of her ribs poking through her skin. I'm sure the situation was similar beneath the leather armor that protected her thigh. She was losing blood quickly. "Your facial expression is telling, O'Barney," Vir-9 said in her usual emotionless tone. "How is your pain tolerance?" I looked into her ruby eyes and smiled. "The pain can't get much worse." She glanced over at Fahalda. "Or maybe it can." She had a dagger, sheathed at her side, and I used it to cut off the rest of her armor at the buckles and ties. The process took me half a minute, but I was all too conscious of the ragged breaths of agony coming from Fahalda. "I'm going to sit you up." I leaned away and removed my tunic. Her red eyes flashed to my chest, and she managed a pained smile. "Why are you doing this?" I moved to her side and wedged an arm under her back. I slowly raised her until she was sitting. I tried to make it as painless as possible, but a slow whine escaped her lips. My tunic was one of Jancy's, and although it was ink-stained, it was densely woven. I wrapped it around Vir-9's chest, under her breasts, and tied the sleeves tightly across her back. The tension made her cry out, but there was no way around it. I didn't want her organs to fall out of her body while I carried her. "We tried to kill you," she muttered. I grabbed a few of the leather straps from her armor and used the cords to bind the bottom part of the tunic around her waist. I imagined this hurt her, but she managed to keep from screaming. "Could you hold on to me if I carried you on my back? If she could, it would make my plan easier." "No, I am tired, Kyair." The words came out between gasps and blood dribbled out of her mouth. The liquid was the same color as her eyes. Fuck, my ties must have punctured a lung. I reached down to her belt and pulled it free of her pants. It was too short for my plan, but I moved over to Fahalda and saw that she had a similar weapon harness. "What are your intentions?" Fahalda wheezed and coughed between each word. "I am trying to save both your lives." I pulled the belt free and walked back over to Vir-9 while I laced the two together. "Impossible." She gasped and coughed again. It was wet and full of the rattle that preceded death. I was suddenly very glad that I escaped without any of the acid touching me. "This is going to hurt again." I slid under Vir-9's left arm and hauled her upright. She grunted and spat out a mouthful of blood while I carried her to the wall that Fahalda rested against. I leaned the pewter-haired woman on the stone, and then wrapped the belts around her hips. I stood in front of her with my back pressed lightly to her bleeding chest, and fastened the ends of the belt around my own waist. I reached over my back and grabbed her arms, pulling them over my shoulders so she rode me piggyback. "I'm tired, Kyair," she whispered in my ear. "No, you aren't. Keep talking to me." I squatted next to Fahalda and slid my left arm under her legs while I cradled her back with my right so the acid on her chest would not touch my bare skin. I stood and took a second to get used to their weight before I started down the switchbacks. "Why?" Vir-9 asked again in my ear. "He wants to see us suffer." Fahalda's voice quivered, and her body shook with a fever. If I just wanted to watch you die, I wouldn't be going through this. Viernine's blood was slick on my bare back, and I worried that she might slide off of her perch. At the bottom of the next section of the road, I saw the monster I had thrown off earlier. It had landed on its skull and died instantly. I killed you. Fehalda's voice was a whimper. I cut your head from your body. You died. You didn't do a good job then. Here I am. No, I did a perfect job. You won't die. She shivered again, and it lasted for much longer than before. He is Kaer, Viernine whispered again. I didn't want to follow you here. She coughed, and blood slid down the side of my face and landed on Fehalda's stomach. I was trying to step carefully, but I imagined it was agonizing to have her injured chest pushed against my back. What do you mean? You are Kaer, the Destroyer. The signs were there, but I never believed it possible. They both gasped when I accidentally set my foot down wrong on a cobblestone, and the jolt ran through the three of us. I don't know how it worked. The humans woke me. I did not remember my past. I just knew my name was Kaer. The memories have returned slowly. Viernine moaned, and I felt the tension in her arms relax. Wake up! I yelled, and they both startled with a gasp. Fehalda had closed her eyes as well. Her body was a furnace in my arms. The acid would claim her in the next few minutes, but I couldn't walk any faster without jarring them. You can't save us. Fehalda's black eyes stared into mine. You are wasting time. My sister wants you to leave this world. Find the ovule and do so. She won't know that you fought on our behalf. She won't know that you tried to help us. Just end our pain, Kaer. No. Fuck you. She coughed again and wheezed a rattle. The smell of the putrid acid and her melting flesh suddenly overpowered the scent of Viernine's blood. You just need to stay awake for 5 more minutes. We were walking through the town now. I passed a few carts that I might be able to use to carry the elven women, but I reasoned that my destination was close enough that switching to a cart now would probably cost me more time and be bumpier than walking. 5 minutes. The castle is weeks away. I can't stay awake much longer. She hissed through the pain. Wake up, Viernine, I commanded. Her arms tightened around my shoulders a bit, and she grunted. Why did you kill Islata? The pewter-haired woman whispered. I didn't want to. I sighed. She loved you, Viernine gasped. I know. It is part of the reason my sister needs you to leave. You killed Islata and destroyed the hope of our people. Fehalda's voice was softer than a whisper, and her black eyes were closed. I don't want to kill your kind anymore. There has been enough death in my life. I want to come to terms with Talaxthi. Fehalda didn't respond, and I shook her slightly. She gasped in pain, and her jaw clenched with frustration. You don't understand what Islata was to us. My sister will not forgive you so easily. The white-haired woman glared at me, but I couldn't tell if her expression was angry or just pained. Viernine began to cough again, and more blood spilled across my shoulders and onto Fehalda. Stay awake, you two. I am not done with you yet. I always imagined I would die in battle, not in the Destroyer's arms, and no one will know of this irony. Fehalda's teeth chattered as she spoke. We are almost there. Stay awake. Hey! Stay awake, I shouted, and Fehalda's eyes opened a crack. Viernine's arms were still tight around my neck, but she had stopped coughing or moving. The house was 100 yards down the road. I was almost there. Where are you taking us? Viernine's voice was hardly recognizable. I heard the liquid in her lungs when she spoke. We are here. I passed the house and did my best to slide down the grassy slope beyond it in a controlled manner. I looked down into Fahalda's eyes, but they were closed. The river received us with cold arms. I carried both of the women with me into its deep, icy depths. The current was strong, more powerful than earth, angrier than fire, and more substantial than air. I pulled the water into me and wondered if these forgotten gods the elvens worshipped even cared that I was saving two of their people. I hoped I wasn't too late.
Chapter 18. Ayalarathi. Another beautiful work, Ayalarathi. Vel'Yarar stood behind me on my balcony and looked at the painting over my shoulder. Thank you. I sighed and sighed and set down my oil brushes. I thought the piece was a failure, but didn't feel like arguing with my servant. Her opinion mattered little, and no matter what garbage I produced, she would praise it effusively. How do you imagine such wondrous landscapes? I shrugged my shoulders and turned to face the beautiful woman. She wore her usual light blue gown and seemed to float above the stone of my veranda. I had lost track of the day, but the position of the sun and heat on my back indicated that it was probably lunchtime. Your guests will be arriving in half of an hour. Do you wish to freshen up? She asked cheerfully. I suppose I must. I stood from my painting stool and gave one last look at the canvas before leaving the scent of my oil paints behind on the balcony. In truth, I was nervous about my plans for today, but I needed to keep Vel'Yarar from discovering what I was up to for a bit longer. There would be an opportunity to include her in the scheme, but now was not the time. The bath was already filled, so I shed my clothes and stepped into the hot, bubbly water. It was scented with the tang of apricots and rose petals. I had not realized my shoulders were tense until the heat and fragrance of the bath relaxed my muscles. "Will you throw this one away?" Vel'Yarar held up my left hand and gently scrubbed away the paint that had somehow found its way to my fingers. Another servant did the same with my right hand. "Probably." "Oh, it is so beautiful. At least gift it to someone." She shook her head with displeasure. "I am aiming for perfection." I felt tired suddenly and wanted to cancel my lunch plans, but I could not. Vel'Yarar had already told me that I was walking a razor's edge with my suitors and maidens. I used to spend hours with them every day, but now only saw them in passing once or twice a week, when I was forced. It had been that way since Kaer was taken from me. It had been almost a year. I still could not keep him out of my thoughts, though I knew he had most likely perished during the intense training Bertadars pushed on the human soldiers. I knew Kaer had survived the process of the change. I saw him sparring in the fields one day as I rode my horse across a nearby hill. That was 4 months ago. I wanted to look for him again and watch him train, but my entourage expected me to picnic with them. I could not risk them riding out to the fields to find me. I would know for sure in the next few days if my lover was still alive. What? Vel'Yarar had spoken to me, but I wasn't paying attention. I asked which dress you prefer, cream or silver. She nodded over to the dresser, where the two day gowns hung. Cream. I don't even think I looked. Perhaps after lunch you will want to ride? She smiled at me and her eyes twinkled. I will paint. Painting makes you moody, mistress. You never ride anymore. Very well, I will do so after lunch. I wanted to go to the training fields now. I could ride down the slope and catch a hint of his scent. I inhaled and almost expected to taste his smoky fragrance again, but instead just smelled the disappointing bathwater. If I rode there, and he was not training, it would almost be worse, knowing he was dead. As long as I avoided the area, I could hold on to the hope that he lived. I had a plan. I had to be patient and stay with it. Vel'Yarar's spies were always right. He was alive. I just needed a few more weeks of patience and we could be together. Vel'Yarar gestured for me to exit the bath and I followed her instructions. The other servants towel dried my slick body before they began to comb and treat my hair. Their administrations were hard to pay attention to through the fog of my mind, but I was shortly dressed in the cream day gown and sitting at the table in my dining area. Mistress. Rilyadar sat next to me on one of the leather-padded chairs and placed her hand on mine. You need to focus on your suitors. You have ignored them for too long. My servants indicate that they are unsettled and consider returning to their homes. That is why we are having this lunch. I sighed and thought about jumping off my balcony, running to the stables, saddling one of the stallions there, and riding until the creature died. Anything to get away from here. She opened her mouth to reply, but a distant knock on the suite door interrupted her words. The woman gracefully floated to her feet and then seemed to dance across the wood floor to receive my first visitor. I admired her body as she moved and thought about the last time we had made love. Was it a week ago? 2 weeks? No, months had passed. Mistress Vertaris has arrived. Rilyadar introduced Elder Dulutsit's son with a graceful bow and sweep of her hand. Welcome, Vertaris. Please join me at the table. I gestured to the spot across from me, and my suitor moved to sit.
Thank you, Ailarathi.
He smelled of cedar and juniper berries. He was muscular and stocky, smaller in stature than Bertalan, but we had sparred together, and I judged him to be just as capable in combat as his cousin. Rilyadar poured the man some water, cherry juice, and then a glass of sparkling white wine. My suitor raised his wine and toast, and I followed his movement. The liquid was a refreshing change from the warm bath.
Am I early?
He motioned to the other chairs in my dining area. Of course, I wanted to spend some time alone with you. I sat back slightly in my chair and breathed the scent of his sudden arousal. At one time, I would have taken pleasure in my ability to control these idiotic men. I no longer cared for their desires.
I am pleased that the single-born wishes to spend her time with me.
He took another sip of the wine, and I could tell he struggled to curb his arousal by shifting his sitting position. How is the army progressing? I asked with a slight smile.
Well, not as quickly as we want. More humans are surviving the changing process, but most of them are too dumb to survive the training. The animals keep killing each other.
He shook his head and nodded to Rilyadar when she placed a small appetizer of cheese and pears on the table between us. How many are changed and ready for battle? I picked up a pear and occupied my hands and eyes with the process of cutting the fruit.
I have a bit fewer than 140 changed. Only 60 I consider ready for combat. Another 30 have some fighting skills but lack discipline. The rest are split between the newly changed and those that I will need to exterminate if they do not improve in the next 2 months.
He took a sip of the cherry juice and puckered his lips at its sourness. When did this experiment begin? 2 years ago? I knew the answer, but wanted to lead him down a particular path in our conversation.
Yes, we have improved the process greatly. I wish I had more than 60 to show for my efforts, but I am predicting we will quadruple that number in the next 12 months.
He was skilled at controlling his emotions, and I did not smell the tin scent of disappointment I expected from him. Tell me more about their training. I cut a wedge of cheese and took a bite paired with the fruit.
I've got them divided into squads of 20. Each group trains together, eats together, sleeps together, and is supervised by one of my hand-picked commanders. My commanders and I review their progress and plan nightly.
I nodded at his description and then drank more of the cherry juice. I doubted his commanders knew much of anything about battle, but I decided it would be wise to keep this to myself. I needed him as a friend for now, and questioning his judgment would not help me reach that end. It seems you have developed a sound strategy. I forced a smile to my lips and gave a passing thought to how my personality had changed in the last 4 years. At one time I would have called him an idiot and belittled his progress. If he protested, I would have broken his body or killed him. Now I realized I needed allies that believed I liked them more than a group of idiots who were terrified of me.
If it would please you, I would enjoy giving you a tour.
I caught the pleasant scent of flowers on him. I would enjoy that. I leaned away in my chair and stretched my arms up against the back of my chair to give him a better view of my torso. The gown was somewhat tight against my breasts and stomach. My nose confirmed the change in his scent immediately. I am so bored, It feels as though I have walked or ridden every square foot of this place. A tour of your training grounds might entertain me for an afternoon.
We have been discussing the idea of taking a few squads out into the wilderness for extended training. Perhaps you would be interested in joining us.
I tried to hide my smile at the influx of his eager scent. I was sure the man imagined all sorts of improbable possibilities that involved us sharing a tent together each night.
We would bring plenty of guards, so you would not need to worry about your safety.
I am not worried about humans.
No, of course you aren't. But these are not mere humans. They have unfettered strength and speed. If not for their training, they would be as dangerous as werewolves. Perhaps not as smart, though.
He leaned back in his chair and laughed. I do like the idea of taking your humans out for training. I imagine it would be much like herding cattle. When I was younger, I would assist in those expeditions across the desert highlands of my mother's lands.
Yes, it will probably be quite similar to your memories.
He smiled, and his scent confirmed his excitement. The idea of all these other guards around does disappoint me, though. I leaned forward a bit, and he matched my movement. It doesn't seem as intimate. Do you agree? One of my fingers found the rim of the wine glass and traced the curve of its edge.
I do agree with the single-born.
His mouth was practically watering at my inference.
I believe that I can select one of the tamer squads for our trip. We won't need any guards, then.
Sounds wonderful. Perhaps you can give me a tour this afternoon. I don't wish to be close to the animals, but I can look upon them from afar. If I like the performance of one of these squads, perhaps just you and I can take them out for a week. I caught a slight scent of sour anxiousness beside me, and I ventured a glance at Relyata, who scowled at me in obvious disapproval.
Excellent idea, Iolarathi. I would enjoy that immensely.
His musky scent of arousal had filled the room, and his eyes were slightly glazed. His little brain was already imagining fucking me every night during this excursion. The fragrance was so potent that I realized that the suitors arriving in the next few minutes would probably smell it. We cannot tell the others about this. We must continue to keep your project a secret from the other tribes. I wouldn't want them to become jealous. Vertatus nodded and licked his lips.
I seem to have expressed my desires a little too plainly. I apologize for my scent.
He frowned and took another drink of the cherry juice. No apology is necessary. If I didn't enjoy your scent, you would not have continued to be my suitor. I motioned to Relyata, and she moved behind me and opened the windows of the dining room. The balcony doors in my bedroom were also open, and the draft blew through my suite. The scent began to dissipate.
Thank you for understanding. It is difficult for your suitors to be in your presence for extended periods of time.
He smiled, and his scent shifted to a taste of broccoli. A knock sounded at my door, and Relyata moved to answer it. I heard the voices out in the hallway, and wasn't surprised when the entirety of my entourage entered with a flutter of laughter and mixed scents. Vertatus and I rose from our seats to greet my guests. We each exchanged words and brief contact with our fingers before Relyata instructed them to sit down at my dining table. My other servants flitted around the seats, and within moments each guest was nibbling on various fruits and cheeses and drinking wine.
Thank you for inviting us to lunch with you, dear sister.
Grednell raised his wine glass, and the other men and women toasted with a voice of agreement. Thank you, Grednell, and thank you all for coming to lunch with me. I've been absent from most of our activities for the last few months, so please think of this as my attempt at an apology. I forced a smile to my lips as I met each of their eyes. Fortunately, they nodded at my insincere words and smiled back. You must have been quite bored without our company. What have you been working on? Dadaniet raised a green eyebrow over a sapphire eye. Her stomach was swollen with Grednell's offspring. The woman was clever, and I had done my best to keep my distance since Grednell had mated with her. Her question revealed what Relyata had told me. She believed her pregnancy entitled her to an elevated status in my father's house. She was mistaken. Nothing useful, I'm afraid. Oh, I doubt it. Surely the single-born is always occupied by something fascinating and important. Of course, if you don't wish to tell us, I understand. She leaned forward a little and tilted her head with a wide smile. I caught a few scents of bitter citrus fear mixed with the taste of their bathed bodies. Vertatus must have feared she was aware of the human army, but Grednell knew nothing of the experiment with the humans. My half-brother was probably worried that I would gut his mate for pushing a topic he knew I did not wish to speak of. I picked up my glass of bubbling wine and made eye contact with the pregnant woman while I drank from the glass. An awkward silence descended on the party, and Daraniet looked down at her stomach. "I have been painting," I said simply. They gasped and opened their mouths to ask me a flutter of idiotic questions about my hobby. Finally, Contania's voice pushed through the rabble. "Do you have any pieces you could show us?" The woman's yellow-gold hair swirled around her shoulders like the branches of a willow tree. During the last few months, Elder Oyman's daughter and Iltaya of Protocule had sent me many requests to spend time with them. While I did enjoy the presence of the two women the most out of my four maidens, I had refused their invitations. "No, I am not happy with any of them yet." I set down my glass of wine and tried not to glide my fingers across the smooth surface of the table. My entourage had little else to do at our estate but train, relax, and gossip. I should have known this topic would come into our conversation. "My mistress just finished a piece out on the veranda, if you all would care to see it," Ilyata said from behind me, and I whirled around to glare at the beautiful woman. She caught my eyes and smiled mischievously. "She was contemplating destroying it, but I believe it should be presented as a gift to one of her loyal companions." The blue-eyed woman finished with a small bow and a gesture to the open balcony doors. Vertatus, Fusik, Alwar, Bertalan, Alatald, and Ripthi shot to their feet and made their way eagerly to the veranda door. Iltaya, Kantanya, and Yerain followed the males. Grednell and Daraniet left the table for the veranda at the end of the group. The green-haired woman was having a bit of difficulty walking with her usual grace, and I realized that her pregnancy might be ending sooner than I expected. Normal gestation was 20 months, and I only found out about my half-brother and Daraniet the night before I sent Kair to the training fields. The math didn't add up correctly, unless she was still 8 months off from the birth. They must have been fucking long before I knew. It angered and disappointed me that both Reliara and I had missed this. "This painting is wonderful, Ayolarathi." Alatald's voice carried back into my room from the veranda. I sighed and rose from my chair. Reliara smiled at me pleasantly, and she only nodded when I returned to glare. I absolutely loathed showing my work before it was completed. Even then I was not often satisfied enough to display my works. Reliara knew this, and though she found all I produced to be of the highest caliber, I saw flaws in every painting that embarrassed me. She thought my entourage's compliments would assure me of my painting's quality, but instead they enraged me. Their opinions mattered little to me and were not as important as my own, even if I could trust any of the simpering sycophants to give me a fair and honest critique.
"Where did you see a scene like this?" Fusik asked.
The men gathered in a half-circle 10 paces away from the easel. I looked at the painting and stifled a gasp. I suddenly understood what the piece was missing.
"Are these landscapes common in the eastern deserts?"
Bertatus's voice was filled with awe.
"No, my friend," Grednell laughed from his belly and then shook his head. "There are no floating islands in our homeland."
"It is a wondrous image. Notice the waterfalls that come from the islands. There is such detail in the water. It practically looks like it is moving."
Iltaya was shy and almost never spoke in front of the group, but the others nodded and voiced their agreement.
"Why would you wish to destroy such a fine work of art?" Daraniet challenged me again with a question. "It is not perfect," I answered her quickly and focused my attention on the painting. I only needed a few more minutes alone with my oils and it would be perfect. My heart suddenly ached and my head started to spin as if I had forgotten to breathe for the last few minutes. I would paint Kair in it, standing on top of one of the islands and staring off into the endless sky. It would be small and hard to recognize, but I would know it was him. He would complete the beautiful world.
"I will gladly take this imperfect masterpiece from you, single-born."
Ripthi laughed and made a playful motion to snatch the canvas. The others mirrored his laugh, but then seemed to notice that I didn't find any humor in his gesture, and my suitor suddenly became quiet. I have not decided to give it to anyone. I was considering sending it to my half-sister, but perhaps I could reward one of you with it. My lips curled into a forced smile. It wouldn't matter much who had the painting. In a few short weeks, I would leave and never return. Perhaps a game? Yerain asked. I smiled back at the beautiful gray-haired woman and stared into her onyx eyes. Like Iltaya, the daughter of Elder Nyela rarely spoke, but while Iltaya seemed harmless and often tried to establish a relationship with me, Yerain never did more than study me with her cold, calculating eyes. Dadanyet made small moves to attempt to challenge me often, but Yerain was like the stalking panther. I knew I would one day feel her teeth. "Perhaps you have a recommendation?" I asked the woman. Every part of her body was perfectly crafted. Even her musky scent was delicious to inhale. I had hoped that my question would have caught her unprepared, but she confirmed my belief that she had awaited an opportunity like this and had a plan in mind. "Carrion, beast hunting. At night, of course. Whoever brings back the corpse of a beast first gets the painting." Her lips spread slightly into a smile. The gathered men and women stared at Yerain with obvious shock while the bitter stench of fear filled the room. Carrion beasts were deadly creatures. They stood half as high as a horse, had razor-sharp claws on each of their four powerful legs, and had a nest of poison-tipped quills at the end of their tails that the creatures could launch with targeted precision at prey up to 80 feet away. The real danger was their intelligence. Fortunately, the animals seemed to hate each other and never hunted in packs. They were also extremely lazy and preferred to steal the dead prey of other animals rather than hunting for live food. They were shy and would often scream at large animals that entered their territory, but almost never made any attack. When threatened, however, they were deadly. Their velvety, camouflaged fur, teeth, and claws were highly prized among the tribes. Hunting groups of half a dozen elvens would often pursue the creatures to gain fame and favor. Most of the larger parties would return successful. Some came back with a few members missing by the beast's teeth, but occasionally an entire group of hunters would disappear. "That sounds..." Rithi glanced around the veranda and licked his lips to tell if anyone else mirrored his fear. "Dangerous."
"Nonsense. Rumor is that the Singleborn hunted the creatures alone quite often in her native lands. Is that correct?"
Yerain raised a gray eyebrow, and her black eyes cast a red reflection back at me. "I have hunted a few." I gritted my teeth. At one time, the thought of my suitors being torn to bits by a carrion beast would have been intriguing. Now I had too much at stake to risk the displeasure of my father or the other tribes.
"Gretnil has told me of your exploits. He said you hunted dozens of the creatures. Unless those stories are exaggerated."
She smiled beautifully, and I thought about kicking her in her pretty throat. The woman was of this tribe. What could she gain by having my suitors kill themselves tonight?
"My sister has killed many of the beasts while hunting solo," Gretnil said quickly. His scent burned a rotting spinach stench. "But she is the Singleborn, and suited to such things."
"Are her suitors not of an equal caliber? She has turned away so many in an effort to find the best males. Surely any one of you could easily handle a carrion beast. I am not nearly as skilled as most of you, but the challenge excites me. I already have a hunting ground in mind."
"Perhaps it would be better to go in teams of two or three, and then use another challenge between the victors to find the final winner."
Fusik turned to me, and I could see the other men and women nod gratefully at his suggestion.
"Perhaps something additional should be added to the prize. It seems that some might need extra incentive."
Yerain's smile grew, and she twisted a finger around a long lock of hair, while she licked her lips to taste the atmosphere of the room. It tasted of fear.
"What did you have in mind?" Dadanyet asked, and I wondered if the two women had planned this exchange. "We can all agree that the Singleborn is beautiful, appealing to both of our sexes. Yet she has refused to take a lover. She should indulge the winner of this contest with the painting, and a night with her."
"Absolutely not," I spat out before I had a chance to think.
"Why not? Are you ovulating now?" she inquired bluntly. I thought about lying to her, but her scent and steadfast gaze led me to believe that she must have known the answer before she asked it. Reliara moved to my side, and I guessed that my servant believed that there was a spy in my staff. No, I am not. I begin in 2 months. Then there is no risk of pregnancy. In case a male wins this contest. It is doubtful, though. I love the painting and have desired you for some time now. I have already picked a hunting spot, and I know I will win. Her words were hungry, and the scent of peach arousal emanated from the bodies of the gathered males and females.
That is an ample enough reward for me. Let us begin tonight.
Bertillon was standing next to me, and the big man's scent almost overpowered me.
I have no fear of the creatures. Tonight I will slay one for the single-born.
Bertatus laughed easily, and the other members of my entourage agreed. Except for my half-brother, he stepped into the middle of the semicircle around my painting and held up his arms to stop the excited conversation.
The painting should be enough reward for the victor of our contest.
He nodded at me, and I felt my stomach clench. I had always thought of Gretnell as a fool, a useful tool to be manipulated because of his loyalty to me. But feelings of affection never entered my mind when I thought of the man. His words made me realize how wrong I had been about my half-brother. He always did his best to protect me, even though he probably sensed that I cared little for him. Loyalty was perhaps more important than any other quality, and in the past I had judged my poor brother too harshly. Nonsense. Yedrin's words cut off Grednil's next phrase. If anything, the single-born needs a night of pleasure. She has been so aloof for many months. We owe her the enjoyment just as much as she owes it to us. The gift of my bed for the night is not appropriate. I should have prepared for this moment with Yedrin, but I had never imagined she would approach from this angle. Then perhaps you should just dismiss us all. We have waited patiently for over 3 years. Then you avoid us all for months. Are we wasting our time? She crossed her arms, and the hint of cinnamon touched her scent, indicating the sincerity of her outrage. Silence hung in the air after her words, and the small crowd turned to face me. I breathed in to inhale their mixture of lust, anticipation, fear, and anger. I needed to continue this charade with the suitors until the army was ready. Yedrin's strategy eluded me. She was Elder Niela's daughter and must have realized that sprinting toward the resolution of my courtship would only put the entire tribe in danger. Unless this was a play directed by Niela. I thought briefly about the older woman and wondered at her motivation. She had always been kind to me on the surface and hinted that I could trust her. From what I observed, she spent a great deal of effort making sure she was not involved in any of the power plays that seemed to hamper the other elders. Reliara had no spies watching the woman since we never thought her a threat. I would have to worry about that possibility at a later time. Yedrin's challenge seemed straightforward, and she probably was not expecting me to agree. What would be the harm in accepting the proposal? Perhaps one of my suitors would die, but that often happened in arrangements such as this. We would send our apologies to the tribe and then ask them for a replacement. Even if one of Lexiol's perished at the claws of a carrion beast, it would not be overwhelmingly tragic. I would blame the situation on Yedrin and could turn her game back in my favor. The worst possible outcome of this was that I would have to fuck one of these morons. I would not be impregnated, so it would not end my courtship with the other suitors. I would prefer a female to win, and if it was Yedrin, that would make things more interesting. The woman was gorgeous, but I did not trust or particularly like her. That would add spice to the sex. You are right, Yedrin. The woman's cold black eyes seemed surprised at my words. I have been away from the group far too long, and I would enjoy some comfort in my bed. Tonight, I have plans, and you mentioned earlier that you already have a hunting spot chosen. That seems an unfair advantage over the others. Let us schedule the hunt for 2 weeks from tonight. That will give everyone time to prepare. Yedrin's scent soured slightly when she realized I had used her own words to delay her game. My brother will not participate, and I also believe we should leave Darinyet out of the game because of her condition. I will participate, Singleborn. Her blue eyes sparked with anger. Ubarua females never decline a challenge. I am a skilled hunter, and my condition will not slow me. Very well, then. My brother will judge the event. I turned to him and nodded. He'll spend the next few days thinking of the rules, and will inspect the corpse if one is brought down. The gathered men and women nodded. Rodiara motioned to me from behind the group. Lunch has been laid out inside. Let us dine together. I pointed back into my suite, and the gathered elvens moved inward. Vertaris was the last to leave the veranda, and I clasped his shoulder and brought my mouth to his ear. I still wish to see your humans. Let us do so after lunch and plan a trip before this little game in 2 weeks. I whispered softly enough to keep the others from hearing.
Of course.
He nodded eagerly and whispered back before we walked inside. If Kair was alive, I wouldn't have to worry about this ridiculous challenge. Rotatus and I would take Kair's group with us into the wilderness. Then I could escape with my love, and we would be together forever.
Chapter 19 The O'Barney. I skidded to a stop against a boulder grasped like a prize in the roots of a massive red pine tree. My breath steamed out of my mouth, and I did my best to control the agonized sound of air leaving my body. I did not hear my pursuers, but I only had a few moments before they would follow me down the waterfall that had led me here and swim ashore to track me. My hand reached down to my chest and gave a light tug on the arrow that pierced my ribcage. The bolt shredded my left lung, but if it had been half an inch north or west, it would have ripped through my heart and ended what was left of my terrible existence. I had been lucky. Alexia was the best archer to ever grace our army, and I could have been the only quarry she had never slain with a single arrow. I grimaced at the memory of the massive and powerful beings. I would have preferred to battle a dozen of those omnipotent flying lizards instead of the group that currently hunted me. I would have stood a better chance of living through the ordeal. I was not sure I wanted to live. Tears began to sting my eyes when I thought of Io Lorothi. I yanked with all my strength and ripped the arrow out of my chest. The tip of the missile was barbed, and it took most of my lung and slit the side of my heart on its way out. I leaned against the tree and tried not to scream. They could probably smell my blood from a mile away, but a shout would help them find me even faster. My vision swam, and the pain wanted me to vomit or pass out or just fucking die already. Sudden strength flooded back into me as if I was fully rested. I started to question whether the elements were a gift or a curse. I had been using them for so long now, the healing came easier than breathing, but I was not sure I wanted to heal any more. I moved before I felt the magic rush toward me. I leapt up and spun backward to grab the edge of the boulder. A massive bolt of fire erupted below me and flung me away from my temporary perch as if I was a fly swatted from the back of a horse by its tail whip. I tumbled across the forest floor and smashed my arm, knee, and face against rocks before I had enough sense to roll to my feet and start running. The path before me was clear, but my battle-ready mind knew better, and I dove to my right to avoid another powerful wave of red fire that burned the trees to ash. Damn it, Malik! The burst of magic helped me locate him, so I sprinted in the opposite direction through the thick forest. There was no trail here, and the branches ripped across my face and body like the lashes of a whip. I felt my old friend's magic chase me again, and I managed to dive behind another large redwood to save myself. A cascade of heat wrapped around me. It choked off all the air and singed the hair that had grown long on my face and head. The tree ripped, splintered, groaned, and tumbled to the ground. I did not stay to watch the giant fall. I could fight, die, or flee. I could never defeat all of them, and as defeated as I felt, I could not give up and break my promise to Io Lorothi. I had to find our daughter. I knew precisely where Malik was now, so I kept as many trees as I could between us as I ran. A shadow flickered through the forest, and I twisted my body to avoid a volley of arrows. They came at me in a triangle pattern, and while I could dodge the first few, the last would take me in the chest and end my flight. I attempted to snatch the arrow from the air before it hit me. This would have been a simple feat had the arrows been launched by an elven or an unchanged human, but our bows pulled hundreds of pounds of weight and sent arrows at speeds that punched ripples into the air with their speed. My hand grasped along the shaft of the closest arrow while I twisted my wrist, arm, and shoulder in an effort to deflect the momentum of the bolt. The thin wood burned across my palm and tore the skin of my fingers as I continued to run, but the arrow stayed in my palm. I almost risked a smile. Alexia had now missed her target 4 times. Perhaps this situation wasn't as dire as I thought. I didn't see the woman ahead of me, but the arrows had obviously come from her. I guessed that I was half a mile ahead of Malik, so I cut my run to the left and attempted to put some trees between myself and Alexia. My guess was wrong, and she stepped around one of the pine trees in front of me with bow drawn and half a dozen arrows knocked between the fingers of her right hand. She was close, less than 100 yards away, and I knew she could slice a fly in half with an arrow at this range. I threw the arrow in my hand at her and dove behind another tree. Arrows ripped through the air and sent dirt, rocks, and pine needles spewing into the sky. I was lucky again, but it wouldn't last forever. I didn't want to kill my friends, but it was now becoming painfully obvious that I could not simply flee from them. It was many hundreds of miles to the ocean, and there was no way my ex-generals would let me go. There was no way I could escape them without fighting back. I pulled the earth to me and ducked out from behind the tree and flung the fire toward Alexia. The purple and green ball of molten magma grew as it traveled through the air, igniting every speck of dried tinder within 30 feet of the missile's path. The tree she hid behind erupted into blue flame that quickly spread to its neighbors like a virus. I ran away from the burning forest. It was not the direction I needed to go, but Alexia would not be able to follow me through the fire, and Malik would not suspect I had taken this path. I could circle back later, if I lived that long. I reached a sharp ravine and jumped down the walls before reaching the shallow river that ran through the canyon. The water ran north, and my gray-haired friend was somewhere on the higher ground to the south of me, so I followed the river. If my pursuers did not realize I was here, it was possible that the water would disguise my scent and the sound of my footfalls would not reach the tops of the cliffs. If they did find me here, I would be easy to trap. The river was old. It bent and twisted through the gorge in an unpredictable tangle thick with rocks and fallen trees. The walls of the canyon were 100 yards apart. Though I was doing my best to run silently, my bare feet slapped against the water and made enough sound to bounce and echo through the gorge. I hoped the labyrinthine twists of the river would throw off my pursuers, but I knew better. These were my generals, the best warriors that had ever lived. Booted footsteps clomped around the next corner, and I guessed whose they were before I rounded the bend. I had no weapon or armor or anything to defend myself with other than my terrible magic. Why? Gorbani's face was ashen and his eyes heavy with grief. I pushed his question aside with a grunt and sprinted the short distance between us. Gorbani was probably the weakest of my generals in melee combat, but his skill was nothing to consider lightly. His favored weapon was a heavy, single-edged longsword that resembled more of a curved cleaver than the straight, pointed blades my other generals preferred. It was a perfect weapon when on horseback, but would be slow and clumsy on foot. Or so I hoped. He drew the heavy blade with a speed and fluidity that came from countless hours of dedicated use, and sliced it horizontally at my chest when I dashed toward him. The quick attack looked effortless and would have killed most opponents, but I expected the move and used my momentum combined with the slickness of the river rock to slide on my knees at the very last fraction of a second. I felt the blade part the air an inch above my hair while I skidded painfully toward him. Surprise registered in his blue eyes, but then I sprang to my feet after his swing had passed and thrust the top side of my head into his face. I had enough momentum to break his skull, but our bones were harder than those of a normal human. Only his nose shattered with a wet splat. My right arm checked his coiled elbow so that he couldn't bring his sword back to cut me, and then I slammed my fist into the blonde man's neck with enough strength to crush his throat into dust. He gasped and struggled against my right arm, but I had already wrapped my fingers over his and twisted them back against his palm. Four of his fingers broke before his grip loosened on his blade enough for me to pry it out of his hands. The lack of air forced him to his knees, and I kicked his chest with enough power to break half of his ribs and send him skipping across the edge of the gentle river. He tumbled through the water, and I chased his body until it stopped and I could assess his condition. If this fight had taken place on horseback, our positions would have been reversed. Gorbani was an incredibly skilled cavalryman, and I only defeated him because of the circumstances within the gorge. I doubted the man could have gotten a horse down these steep walls or through the thick forest. His face was covered in blood from the broken nose, and his breath came out in forced and labored gasps. The crushed windpipe would not kill him, but it would prevent him from chasing me for the next quarter of an hour. He looked up at me from the ground with his blue eyes, and I could see the hate, fear, and despair in them. I stepped on his forearm and raised my sword to finish him. There would be no recovery from a beheading, and it would mean one less hunter to follow me to the ends of the world. Our eyes met, and he attempted to wheeze out a word. "I'm sorry, my friend." He struggled against my arm and probably tried to force as much earth through his body as possible to heal himself. He should have been able to blast me with fire, but he was only able to harness that particular type of magic when he had complete focus and control. I brought his blade down and then halted the edge half an inch from his nose with an abrupt movement. He gasped, and his body stopped twisting under me. "I love you too much to kill you, Gorbani. I am sorry for all the things I have done. You have to let me go. Everything has been taken from me now. I won't give her the satisfaction of killing me. Go live your life." His eyes opened wide, and he tried to choke something out through his broken windpipe. I didn't wait to hear what it was. I had already spent enough time not killing the blonde horseman, and I was sure that Alexia, Thayer, and Malik were close. I had to run. I had to escape. I left Gorbani at the side of the river and continued my sprint north. At least I had a blade now, so that if I ran into Thayer, I would be able to defend myself for a few minutes against the Swordmaster. While the idea of fighting any of my ex-generals caused me fear, none other than Shlara could defeat me in one-on-one combat. Thayer would be a tough opponent, though, and I wouldn't be able to handle him in the same manner as Gorbani. He would be cunning, and would no doubt do his best to delay me until Alexia and Malik caught up to our position. Thayer also knew what I would do when pursued through the woods. He was with me when we eluded the Elvens. He would guess which direction I would take, and could calculate the speed of my flight, where I would hide. He would anticipate everything I would do, and how I would think. If even Gorbani was smart enough to cut me off in the gorge, Thayer would be several steps ahead already, and had probably set up the perfect ambush with Alexia and Malik. The canyon wound to the east. The side of the cliff crumbled into a rough staircase of boulders only 60 feet high. I could bound up the slope without losing too much speed and escape into the dense cover of the forest once again. Then I could cut back and head to the ocean as I had planned. Or was this Thayer's trap? Would I find him positioned behind the outcropping of trees, ready to strike me down once I crested the ridge? If I stopped, I could listen and smell for signs of him, but I did not have time for that. Malik and Alexia were probably gaining ground on me already. I was often risk-averse, yet some of my most glorious victories had come from the times I ignored caution and reason and just did what I could to survive. Thayer knew I was desperate. He would expect me to take this route as an easy way out of the gorge. I decided instead to continue running. Seconds after I passed the escape route, I heard heavy-booted feet smash into the riverbed beside me. As I suspected, he had been lying in wait at the tree line. I was faster than my bulky friend, and the many years of solo travel through the wilderness had only increased my ability to run through the forest. Thayer couldn't keep up with me, and within a few minutes the sounds of his heavy footfalls faded. I still needed to escape the canyon. I saw no way out besides climbing, but that would give Thayer ample time to catch and kill me. The flow of the shallow river had trickled down to a narrow stream. If the canyon ended before I found a safe way out, I would be cornered by the three of them. I saw another spot on the cliff that I could easily ascend and decided to stop and face Thayer. I might not be able to defeat the big swordsman before Malik and Alexia arrived, but there was a chance, and I could always continue running. I jumped up the rocky canyon wall and then turned when I heard him approach. He stopped some 60 feet away and drew a pair of thick, long swords from his belt. None of them were wearing their decorative animal armor. Though we could move easily in the massive suits of tempered gray steel, I would have tired them out by now had they been encumbered by the extra weight. Instead, my old friend wore light armor of fitted leather with metal plates in key locations over his heart and around his neck. I doubted the armor would do much to keep my blade from cutting him, but it was better than attacking me while naked. If it took me a fraction of a second longer to pierce his flesh, he could possibly avoid damage altogether. "Make this easy on us both." Thayer stood far enough away from me to allow himself time to dodge a magical attack. "I don't intend to die today." I kicked a rock at my feet, and it flew in his direction. I was surprised at my aim, but he flicked one of his blades through the air casually and knocked the projectile aside. I was wasting time. Thayer's eyes flickered, and I twisted myself sideways in desperation. Alexia had sneaked behind me, and one of her twin short blades ripped across the side of my ribs where my heart had been a hair of a second ago. I lashed at her with my sword, but her blade was already in the way, and my attack was snuffed before I put any power behind it. Alexia was unbelievably fast, even for one of our kind, and the only way I could ever best her during a sparring match was by keeping distance between us. This was not possible here, and I struggled to block her quick stabs with Gorbani's cumbersome sword and my empty right hand. Alexia's blades were quickly drenched in my blood, and I knew my attempt to flee my old life was about to come to an end. Thayer sprang up to join our fight. He swung his blades as he leapt, and I risked a block with Gorbani's sword. The clash of our weapons echoed through the valley, and the force pushed me back across the surface of the boulder. Thayer and Alexia tried to rip my flesh open with synchronized attacks, while I fended them off with a desperate combination of parries and footwork. Sometimes, fighting multiple opponents was easier than battling a lone assailant. Unless the warriors were trained to fight in a coordinated unit, their attacks would often interrupt each other, and their positioning would allow opportunities for strikes that a single opponent could easily defend. I had been challenged by pairs and groups many times in my past, and always emerged victorious. But this was Alexia and Thayer. They had